නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So as you all can remember, last time we completed discussing Chabbisodhana Sutta, where we discuss how an arahant is declaring his attainment, and then Buddha explain us how to verify it by asking various questions and allowing him to explain his patipada, his practice. And basically that gives a kind of an insight that our own practice also has to be in line with such kind of purification. So basically six purifications we discussed, and basically that helps us to align our practice or verify our practice according to such purifications. Now I thought of taking another sutta where some interesting incidents have happened. So this is available in Anguttara Nikaya Chakkanipata, where sixfold information or items are included, and there it is called Sona Sutta, and sometimes we can call it as Sona Koli Visa Sutta. And there are few Sona Suttas, but this is the one available in the Anguttara Nikaya, Numerical Discourses of the Buddha, in the Chakkanipata, the sixth chapter. Now if we go through the sutta, it's a very interesting situation. Incident happened. At that time, Buddha was dwelling in Rajagaha, in Gijjakuta, where what we call as a mountain vultures peak, Gijjakuta Pabbata. And at that time, Venerable Sona was residing in same Rajagaha, in the Sita Vana, called Cool Grove. So this Cool Grove is actually a sort of a cemetery where nobody is living, but sometimes monks, nuns stay there to have kind of a secluded life. So they are fairly dedicated towards the meditation and not associating with others, completely trying to achieve seclusion so that they are ardent in their practice. This Venerable Sona, actually in the household life, he is a very rich person, and his father is also a merchant, all coming from the the merchant clan, and they are very much like today's bankers. So they are also doing some sort of money related activities, and so they are quite rich. And again, this according to the commentary, so this Sona actually had very luxurious life and with lot of luxuries. And again, because of his that kind of luxurious life, he was quite delicate. His body was quite delicate, and he is not much into the hardships of life, quite delicate person. And again, one day he happened to listen to Buddha's teaching, and then he decided to become a monk. And then Buddha informed him that you got to get the permission from your parents, and somehow he was able to get that. And then he actually became a monk. And after being a monk, so he is quite an ardent practitioner, diligent practitioner. So he is actually practicing meditation very hard. Actually, in the commentary it is mentioned, his walking path, again and again he is using, because of his delicate life, so he start bleeding because of the walking. The walking path may be a little rough. Again and again this Venerable Sona is walking, using it, and then ultimately the walking path is very much like filled with blood, because he is using it so hard. And so others even have noticed that. So his walking path has become reddish because of the blood. Now he is not stopping, by the way. is so diligent in practice, and as a result of that is continuing, and one day he sort of reflecting about his own liberation. Now there were many other practitioners, fellow monks practicing with him, maybe had ordination or higher ordination together, and they are his friends, and he is reflecting like this: I am one of the blessed one's most energetic disciples, yet my mind has not been liberated from the taints by non-clinging. Now he is now having a kind of a domanassa. You can remember when we were discussing Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, we discussed about Nekkhammasita Domanassa, where when one become a monk or you are an ardent practitioner, so sometimes we have a certain kind of despair because we couldn't achieve what we want. So we suppose that you are determined to become an arahant, you are determined to become a sotapan, but yet you can't do it. Still you are practicing, but no results. So at that time there's a kind of a situation in the mind. So you are spending a lot of time and you are dedicating yourself, but still there is no kind of a tangible result. So you feel a little depressed, you feel a little upset, a little sorrow is coming to the mind. So this is what we call as Nekkhammasita Domanassa, a kind of a despair attached with the spiritual life. And so this Venerable Sona has the same thing. Now he is reflecting, now he is an ardent practitioner, diligent practitioner among the Buddha's other practitioners, fellow monks, and he yet cannot achieve anything. Now he is thinking of disrobing, because no point of continuing like this, he wants to disrobe, and he is thinking, okay, I have enough wealth, once I go back, if I return back to the lay life, I can do something good. And I can enjoy wealth and do some wholesome meritorious deeds as well. Then let me give up this training, monkhood, and return back to the lay life, the lower life. So interestingly, when Venerable Sona was thinking like this, Buddha has noticed that. So Buddha was in a faraway place, by the way. But interestingly, Buddha noticed that Venerable Sona has a kind of a depressive thought. Then immediately Buddha appeared in front of Venerable Sona. So it is mentioned like one may extend his drawn-in arm or extend very quickly he come back to appear in front of Venerable Sona. So typically there seems to be a tradition that if Buddha happened to visit some monk, so they always prepare a seat. So because the teacher is available, and from teacher that you have taken the kammatthana, the meditation object, and in case Buddha want to visit you, so always you are keeping a seat prepared for him. So similarly, Venerable Sona also seems to have prepared already a seat. So Buddha appeared there, and then he is questioning. Buddha is questioning Venerable Sona. And he is asking, Sona, when you were alone in seclusion, didn't the following course of thought arise in your mind? Now Buddha has seen the complete situation, and he is repeating what is the kind of thought appeared in Venerable Sona's mind. I am one of the blessed one's most energetic disciples, yet my mind has not been liberated from the taints by non-clinging. Now there is wealth in my family, and it is possible for me to enjoy my wealth and do meritorious deeds. Let me then give up the training and return to the lower life, so that I can enjoy my wealth and do meritorious deeds. Now this is the thing that went on in Venerable Sona's mind, and Buddha repeated that, and then Venerable Sona admitted that, yes Panthe, I went through such kind of a mindset. And then actually this sutta coming up with a very interesting simile, the simile of a lute, tuning a lute. And actually we can comparatively take it as maybe a violin, maybe a guitar, the same type of situation here. So how one can tune it? So if you are a little familiar with tuning a guitar, Or if you are familiar with tuning a violin, probably it's quite easy to understand. Now, when a lute is also tuning, so Buddha is asking how you are doing it. So it seems like Venerable Sona is quite familiar with this, and he seems to be a skillful player of lute. So he is quite familiar with it, and Buddha is asking how you are doing it. Then Buddha asks whether the strings are too tight. Is it producing the proper tune, proper tone? Is it easy to play? Then Venerable Sona answers, no, it is not possible because the strings are too tight. And then Buddha asks, if the strings were too loose, will it produce proper sound? Then Venerable Sona again answers, no, it is not. And then Buddha mentioned, if it is properly adjusted and it is properly balanced, then only, isn't it, then the proper pitch or proper tone is produced. It is not too tight, it is not too loose, but it is properly tuned with the correct pitch. Then Venerable Sona answers, yes. Now you can see, I mean, Buddha in a way very beautifully here is explaining the Dhamma with a familiar simile. Now Venerable Sona seems quite familiar with this instrument, and therefore Buddha is using the same simile, same kind of experience to explain him how to practice. So sometimes we are also spending a lot of time because we probably don't know the proper balance. So that is what actually the emphasis in this sutta, the lesson that we can learn from this sutta, how to balance. And now Buddha mentioned, so to Sona, if energy is aroused too forcefully, this leads to restlessness. And if energy is too lax, this leads to laziness. Now this is related to energy, particularly the effort, how much effort that you are putting while you are practicing. Now, so this is something actually we have to practically learn, because otherwise it's very difficult to theoretically mention this. Theoretically we can tell, okay, you need to maintain proper balance, not too lapse, not too tight. So we can say so. But in order to get a practical feeling about it, you need to practice. So during the practice only you know, okay, if I put too much effort, then the mind may get on to some sort of restlessness, agitated state. On the other hand, if I am not putting enough effort, then my mind get into some sort of a drowsiness, laziness. Now, here actually we can discuss about the balancing of faculties, balancing of spiritual faculties. So probably you have heard about five spiritual faculties: Saddha, Viriya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. Saddha is the faith, Viriya the effort, Sati mindfulness, Samadhi concentration or collectedness of the mind, Panya the wisdom. Now these are the five faculties that we are trying to develop during our spiritual practice. Now during the course of the practice, so these are time to time slowly growing. Say for example, at the beginning we don't know what is mindfulness. So we are trying to exercise various activities. Say while walking, we are trying to keep our attention on the foot. Say while brushing the teeth, we are trying to keep our attention on what we feel, or what each and every action. And maybe while breathing, we are trying to keep our attention on the breath. So likewise, these little exercises help us to establish mindfulness, because otherwise mind is keep forgetting, keep wandering, rumination. So many issues are there. So again and again we are trying to bring our attention to a present moment activity. Later we may understand, okay, unlike before, now mind is somewhat mindful. Previously it is constantly wandering, constantly distracted. But now I can give an object to the mind, now fairly it is obediently stay with that particular object. So it's a very much like a selected object. Breath is a selected object. Among many other objects are available, so you are allowing the mind to again and again be with it. It's a boring task because breath is not something interesting, and it is also quite subtle, and it is not exciting, so mind may refuse to do it. So that's why we need to have a fair amount of energy in order to do that. So at the beginning, therefore, a lot of energy is needed, because mind wanders and again you need to bring it back. Again wanders, again need to bring it back. So likewise, fair amount of energy is required to continue this task. And again there is no result. And it's quite discouraging, because mind is so scattered, so much distractions. So it is very much like your effort is wasted. So that to that extent, the things are quite difficult at the beginning. But without giving up, you need to again and again apply effort. And again, when mind collapses, mind discouraged, you need to again encourage it. So a lot of energy is needed. So at this early stage, many defilements are also there. Various hindrances are also there while you are trying to pay your attention onto breath or rising and falling or left and right. So many defilements are also coming and a lot of doubts are also there, and you don't have any hands-on experience, and sometimes while sitting you are sleeping. So many issues are there. So in a way we have to be quite self-compassionate at this stage, and again most importantly we have to have a lot of energy. So this energy, effort is the one taking us to the front or allowing us to practice. Even though we don't really know where we are going ahead, or we don't know what we are doing, we don't have much understanding. Anyway, again, faith is also quite necessary, because you have to have faith, because otherwise you don't do it. And without much tangible results, and again, you don't feel much encouraged, sometimes you don't feel happy, but still, having enough faith is quite necessary, otherwise you give up practice. Now, on the other hand, at this time still wisdom is very less, concentration is very less, mindfulness is also very less. What we have is simply effort and faith. So therefore, at the beginning, we need to have a lot of faith on the Buddha and his teaching, and about the teacher, about the method that you are doing. So all these are really, really dependent on the faith. On the other hand, you need to have a lot of effort, encouragement coming from yourself in order to continue the practice. And later, slowly as you are growing, you may understand, okay, now some amount of mindfulness is available. I can walk 10 steps mindfully. I can keep my attention on breath for say 10 minutes. Say if you are practicing rising and falling, you can keep your attention on rising and falling for a long time. So likewise, now you feel kind of a progress. You need to actually. That's why I said, so this is quite practical. No point of talking these things merely through the theory, because when you practicing only, you know, okay, what is really energy is, what is really faith is with respect to the practice, and what is mindfulness is with respect to this practice. So more and more your mind is now capable of staying with the breath, rising and falling or left and right. So that indicates some amount of mindfulness has grown and you can notice it. So important thing is that you should notice it. So without noticing it, you can't progress. You need to comparatively measure it, understand it. Suppose at the beginning of your practice, say your mind is quite distracted, only 2 steps you could be mindful. But say after 1 week, now you can easily maintain 10 steps. Say after another week, you can easily continue without any interruption from this end to the other end during the walking path. Now, likewise, you need to have some kind of an understanding that the method, the technique that you are using is useful and giving results. So that is how we are slowly gaining confidence, and again, that is how we slowly get to know, okay, there is a quality called mindfulness is growing in the mind. Still energy is required, still faith is required, but other than those two, you may understand, okay, now another quality called mindfulness is growing in the mind. And another time, you may understand, okay, now not only during walking or sitting, I can even brush my teeth mindfully. I can even eat mindfully. I can even wear my clothes mindfully. Say, I can simply stand mindfully. I can drive mindfully. So likewise, now you are slowly applying your mindfulness to your daily activities, and slowly, now mindfulness is gaining power. Now maybe later time, you may understand, okay, today mind is quite mindful. Every activity I was quite mindful, quite awake. And maybe another day you might even complain, okay, today mind is not that mindful. Just sleep on forgetting. Or unmindful, so the mindfulness is less today. Now that indicates, okay, now you know the quality of mindfulness. Certain days are there, mindfulness is quite intense, you can feel it, and there are certain other days and other times that the mindfulness is quite less. So as a faculty, now you know, okay, mindfulness is another faculty now. Saddha is a faculty, effort is a faculty, mindfulness has become a faculty now. Certain days it is the one governing the mind. Every time it is very much like a companion with you and always helping you to be mindful. That is the one very much controlling yourself as a monitoring process. Now this have to happen. I mean, no point of theoretically only know this, but these things have to happen within the yogi's mind. Practitioner should know, okay, today the mind is quite mindful, mindfulness is available, every activity is done very much under supervision. Less distractions. Even if mind gets distracted, it quickly returns. So this sort of understanding has to be available in the practitioner's mind. Now mindfulness actually takes kind of a monitoring process, starts to do a monitoring process. Now only actually the proper balancing going to happen. So how the balancing happen? Now as I mentioned, there are five faculties. Saddha, Viriya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. So Sati is in the middle. Mindfulness is in the middle. So in a way it is quite interesting why mindfulness has placed in the middle. That may be because it is doing this mind, this proper balancing part. Mindfulness is the one doing this proper balancing. So what needs to be balanced? So it has to be balanced faith with wisdom, and then effort with concentration. So they are the ones in the other sides, both sides. Say faith, saddha, Viriya, the effort is, assume that they are in the left side. So in the right side, what you have is the concentration, samadhi, and the wisdom, panya. So left and right sides are to be balanced. So how are we going to balance? So as Buddha mentioned here, therefore sona resolve on a balance of energy, achieve evenness of the spiritual faculties, and take up the object there. Now these words are very, very important. Balance of energy. Now, as Buddha mentioned again, if energy is aroused too forcefully, this leads to restlessness. And if energy is too lax, this leads to laziness. Suppose at the beginning of your practice, if you are not putting enough energy, then you don't even feel like practicing. And you feel sleeping. You feel that another activity may be important than the practice. Because less energy. And sometimes your mind refusing to practice. Because there are no still any tangible results. So as a result of that, you need to have a lot of energy at the beginning. But as you are growing the practice, so you may understand, okay, if I continue to note, so this noting seems to be a disturbance to the mind. For example, say you are practicing Anapanasati, when in-breath is available, you are noting it as in. When out-breath is experienced, you note it as out, in, out, in, out. So likewise, you are mentally verbalizing it. So as you continue, assume that your mindfulness is growing, concentration is growing, and your mind is now fairly staying with the breath. So if this is happening successfully, in a given moment, probably you may understand, so this when I am murmuring, or when I am noting as in, so it makes a little jerk to the mind. When I am noting as out, it makes a little jerk to the mind. It's very much like, suppose that water is trying to settle, but the moment that you put a stone to it, again a ripple happens. So likewise, you may understand, okay, mind want to settle now, but I am disturbing this settling process by again and again doing this noting. Actually, noting is kind of an effortful activity, kind of strongly fixing your mind onto the particular object. But now mind is already there with the object. So if this understood, now you may have to give up mental noting. So that indicates you are reducing energy. Previously you have to have a lot of energy to avoid distractions and to even to maintain the posture and to somehow bring yourself to the cushion, bring yourself to the walking path. So a lot of energy is needed. And there may be lustful thoughts, there may be angry thoughts, there may be laziness, doubts. So to overcome all this, you need to have a lot of energy. And again, a lot of faith. But now things are happening smoothly, getting better. So at that time now, you need to reduce energy. So if you are not reducing energy, then that settling may not happen. As I mentioned, so the water is now going to settle, calming down, tranquilizing. But again and again, if you are jerking it, if you are again and again disturbing it, it may never settle. So we need to understand that. So as we are continuing our practice, in the middle of the practice, now you need to reduce energy. So as an example, you can stop noting now. So mind remain quiet now. There is no any murmuring. Actually, the term murmuring is also not correct. We can simply say as mental noting. So this mental noting also has to be stopped. And now what we have to experience is a completely silent mind, very quiet mind. So with such completely silent, quiet mind, okay, you are still noticing, still observing the breath. In-breath happens, out-breath happens, in-breath happens, out-breath happens, but the mind is completely silent. Now this is how, in a way, one, as an example, you are balancing energy so that concentration is growing. Now the other side is the concentration. On the left side you have energy, on the other side you have concentration. Now in order for the concentration to further develop, collectedness of the mind to further develop, so you need to reduce energy so that it is developing. But an interesting thing here is if you reduce energy too much, then you feel drowsy. Then what happens? So the other side, the concentration is making you more comfortable, tranquilized, and you fall asleep. So probably you all have experienced this as a practitioner, because if you are not putting enough effort, if you are not maintaining a proper posture, if you are not maintaining kind of a wakefulness, kind of a diligent attitude, then mind falls asleep because not enough energy is available. So at that time again, probably you have to sort of wake up again, you have to arouse energy, you have to probably temporarily you have to start the noting again, left, right, or in, out, like that. So likewise, you have to arouse energy. Now this proper balancing, therefore, in between energy and concentration is something that you need to practically know and practically do while you are meditating. And similar situation in the walking path as well. At the beginning, you have a lot of energy, you are, say, walking in a diligent manner, with the noting left, right, or lifting, moving, placing, lifting, moving, placing. So likewise, a lot of energy is there. And now, as a result of that, less and less distractions, mind get fairly concentrated. Now you need to slowly remove this noting part. Probably you are making it shorter. Instead of telling left, right, probably you may say 1, 2. Lifting, moving, placing, say instead you might say lifting and placing. So likewise, you are now reducing this disturbance to the mind. And ultimately you give it up. Now the whole walking happens with a very quiet mind. But important thing is mind shouldn't be distracted. Now at this moment, if you are applying too much energy, what happens is that very energy, which was quite helpful to collect your mind itself, is actually making the mind to become agitated, mind to become restless. Because now it is, the mind is ready to quieten, ready to calm down, tranquilize. But unfortunately, you are constantly putting too much energy. Now mind get agitated. Now mind get restless. So these things you need to practically experience. Actually, in a way, trial and error, we are knowing this. We should know this. So we sometimes do mistakes, sometimes putting in too much energy. So the mind get agitated, restless. Sometimes we are not giving enough energy, so you feel drowsy and you feel sleepy, nodding. So these things are the mistakes. And through mistakes only we should know, okay, what is the middle range? What is the middle point? How much energy is required? At the beginning, maybe higher energy is required. So as you are reaching the middle, so you need to gradually reduce the energy so that you are allowing tranquility to grow. Now, likewise, the energy and the concentration are to be balanced. Now, how about faith and wisdom? So at the beginning, faith has to be available because not enough wisdom is available. But again, sometimes it depends on the person's attitude, kind of the character type. Certain people are with lot of energy. Certain people are with lot of faith. Certain people are with lot of inquisitive attitude. So they want to check the situation. They want to verify whether the practice is correct, whether the practice is giving results. So that is why in the, what you call this Iddipada. So there are 4 Iddipadas are recognized. Chanda, Chitta, Virya, Vimansa. So Chanda Iddipada is always having the desire to practice. Virya Iddipada always leading is the effort. Without giving up, you are maintaining the effort. Chitta Iddipada, where you have determination. And the Vimansa Iddipada, you are quite inspecting. Always want to verify, always want to check the situation. You always want to have kind of an investigation. So the Vimansa Iddipada. So different people are somewhat biased with these different kinds of Iddipada. And anyway, within our practice, we need to balance these things. And if you are a faith character, say you are visiting the shrine room, you are constantly paying respect, and all that kind of faith related activities are fairly available, and That is good, by the way. But as you are continuing, instead of this kind of faith, you need to allow the verification-based faith. Probably you might remember, so Buddha instructs to know him through the Dhamma. Yo dhammam passati, so mam passati. Through Dhamma, we should know Buddha. But at the beginning, we don't know about Buddha. So what we have is a kind of a faith. What we have is a kind of a love, kind of a respect. But later, through Dhamma, we should try to verify. So Buddha's teaching is available, it is something practical. Now we need to develop that practical teaching within ourselves. And when we are developing it through the Dhamma, through the practice, we start to know Buddha. So that is a very interesting phenomenon. Now it is not a kind of a blind faith, but this is the type of faith which is based on facts. It's a kind of a factual faith. Now you are not simply depending on say having offerings and all sort of say previous kind of ritualistic activities. You might even not go into the temple now. You might not even say do the chanting, but internally you have a strong conviction. Internally you have a lot of faith about the Buddha, kind of an unwavering type of faith about the Buddha, because through yourself you have seen the validity of Dhamma. You have seen the reality of Dhamma, how true it is. So it's a kind of an unwavering type of faith. So therefore all these spiritual faculties are in a way evolving. It's kind of going through a kind of an evolution. It is not the same faith available after some time. It is not the same energy you have after some time. It is not the same mindfulness you have after some time. It is not the same concentration you have after some time, and it is not the same wisdom you have after some time. So all these spiritual faculties are evolving. Now, so probably we may start with a lot of faith, maybe somewhat type of kind of a blind faith, but it has to allow wisdom to grow. So if you are not putting yourself into practice, if you are not doing enough contemplation, if you are not allowing experiential or meditative knowledge to develop, so then we are not allowing wisdom to develop. So that means, so when you are into practice, you need to put a fair amount of time in the practice. And during the practice only, you are having some sort of experiential knowledge. Say, understanding about the impermanence, understanding unsatisfactoriness, understanding non-self, and probably you might even have kind of a disenchantment, relinquishment. Now these are all supported by wisdom. Now, when such wisdom is available, so more and more you are turning to yourself. Turn into your own practice and start trusting that practice. Start trusting or keep confidence on those spiritual qualities available within yourself. Previously, we trust the Buddha and superficially about the Dhamma, but now we are trusting about our own qualities, our own spiritual qualities. And Dhamma has to operate within ourselves. Now, at that time, we can say, okay, now the wisdom is developing. Wisdom has come to the front. And when wisdom is developing, actually you may even notice, okay, today morning, okay, in the morning, okay, I had a very penetrative type of knowledge. Difficult situations, I can quickly understand, okay, this should be the solution. Particularly, say, if you are practicing kind of a meditation like Dhatu Manasikara, elements meditation. So it's a type of meditation which is producing a lot of wisdom, type of investigative attitude. So this investigation is the path of developing wisdom. And at the beginning, you may start with investigating maybe breath, investigating the right and left and right, investigating various element characteristics. So these are all very much connected with the sampajanya, clearly comprehending the phenomena. So more you clearly comprehend these phenomena, more you understand their common characteristics, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self. So the wisdom is growing in different ways. So as it is growing, then slowly you need to allow that to come first, and not forgetting about the practice. Now, if we have only wisdom, and we can't really call it proper wisdom, we can say kind of a knowledge, maybe the book knowledge, maybe little bit of investigation is there, but superficial, depending on the logical or rational thinking. So if you don't have faith, kind of the love, kind of the trust, confidence of the Buddha or his teaching, then you become sort of dry type of a mindset. So it's always kind of a investigation is there, always kind of a verification is there, finding fault is there, complaining is there, little unrest is there. So now you are losing the balance. So the faith is the one, is very much like a lubricant, making your mind again little, say, soften. So in the practice, sometimes when you are engaged with the vipassana, say what you experience may be very dry. There is no much interest, but again and again you have to do it. And probably you may see rising and passing away. So this may be very dry. But at that time you need to have kind of a lubricant to again soften the mind, again gladden the mind. So this is again happening through the faith. Probably you may again practice Buddha Anusati, again practice a little bit of Metta. So this actually softens the mind. It is true that we are coming back to the conceptual level, conceptual world, but can't help, you need to maintain a kind of a balance. Otherwise, this too much knowledge, too much investigation may again lead to some sort of doubts and some sort of restlessness, some sort of agitation. And even sometimes, if you want to go to some extreme situations, even certain suicidal thoughts, even can happen. Because you are not properly balancing. There is no much happiness in the mind. It's very much like depressed. And so the balance is lost. So as a result of that, when faith is developing, time to time you need to balance it using the faith. When wisdom is developing, time to time you need to balance it with faith. So faith is the one again calming you down, again softening you, again gladden the mind, relax the mind. So who is the one monitoring this whole thing? So that is the mindfulness. That is why mindfulness is kept or placed in the middle, where Buddha mentioned these faculties are to be balanced. Resolve on a balance of energy, achieve evenness of the spiritual faculties, and take up the object there. So when these spiritual faculties are even, then what you see, what you observe is more clear, more correct than you are looking at the same thing with an imbalanced mind. Say, for example, you are trying to experience a painful feeling. At that time, you have to have enough energy because it's a painful feeling. Otherwise, mind may simply repel back. But with energy, you are continuing it. Again, you have to have enough concentration to distinctly know this painful feeling. It has to be well focused. Mind has to be well focused. Again, have to have some faith, because this is something, say, depressive in a way. The painful feeling is little disturbing. But even to continue without giving up, you have to have some faith. Okay, even though this feeling is little bitter, I probably can learn from it. So you have that softening part also available in the mind. Now the investigation is going on to understand all different aspects of this painful feeling. So that is the wisdom part. So likewise, when these faculties are well balanced, properly recognize the meditation object. At this given example, the painful feeling is what Buddha refer here. On that occasion, when faculties are balanced, on that occasion take the object there. Then only you may get an unbiased investigation, unbiased observation, well-balanced observation. Virya samatang adittaha indriyanang cha samatang pativijja tathacha nimittan ganhahi. Tathacha nimittan ganhahi. So when the faculties are fairly balanced, now you do the observation. It's a kind of a careful observation, well-balanced observation, unbiased observation. Then only you will know the proper characteristic, proper nature, reality of that particular phenomena which you are investigating. So this is applicable, this theory is applicable everywhere to every type of meditation, particularly in the Vipassana. So either it may be walking meditation, you are experiencing left, right, something. Either it may be walking meditation when you are experiencing different sensations. Either in the walking meditation when you are experiencing various element characteristics. Maybe in the sitting meditation if you are practicing rising and falling. In the sitting meditation when you are practicing Anapanasati. In the sitting meditation when you are practicing say elements meditation, Dhatumanasikara. Maybe in practicing the Vedananupassana, mindfulness on feelings. Even when you are practicing Chittanupassana. Even when practicing Dhammanupassana. So everywhere this theory is very, very important, where you are maintaining the proper balance of faculties. When the faculties are well balanced, then only you are actually doing the proper investigation, proper observation onto various phenomena. Okay, I think that is enough for today. With that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Bhante, I have a question about the practice. There a stage in our mindfulness journey where it does feel like, you know, mindfulness and concentration are both increasing, but in the daily life, because of maybe the mindfulness is stronger, is able to notice more subtle defilements, and mm-hmm. it just feels like the mind just has constant, you know, it's just constantly running around. And if that is happening in our practice, what is the balancing factor that we need to focus on?
Yeah, so, I mean, now when we are considering the faculties, yes, we discussed about balancing faculties. And when we are growing to the power, bala, so there Buddha mentioned, you start unshaken even when, say, mindfulness is less, even when mind is lethargic, even when mind is not that faithful, even when mind is sluggish, even when mind is sort of foolish even. So there are certain unevenness time to time happen, but still you are confident now. You have gone through a fair amount of practice. You know how to balance these faculties. So you are now not a sort of a beginner, but you have some hands-on experience. And at that moment, what we are calling to the more than faculties, what we are, where we are, is at the bala level, at the power level. Say, for example, the faith. Previously, when faith is present, so we are happy. Okay, I know there's this faith available. But when faith is not available, I am not happy, probably. But at this level, faith is not available. But you are not losing your balance because you know I can quickly maybe arouse energy or sorry, faith or maybe faith is something now dependent on the wisdom. So likewise, you have quite kind of reasons, enough confidence to maintain even this lack of faith. Again, you can again recover in the other hand. Similarly, say the effort. Previously, when the effort is there, you know, okay, there's a presence of effort. But now probably you are nodding, you are becoming drowsy. So the faith is less. It has even go to the sluggishness. But you are not worried about it. Because you know, I mean, I can correct it. I can handle it. So that is the power level. And interestingly about the mindfulness, so that is actually, Bhante Dhammajiva actually has taken that as the, say, very much another motto. Where pamade na kampatiti sati balam. So even when mind is unmindful, still you are not wavering, still you are not shaken. Na kampati, you are not shaken even when mind is unmindful. Because you know, I can make it mindful. This mindfulness I can re-establish. Again, I can sharpen. And on the other hand, when mind is scattered, still you are not shaken because you know I can quickly concentrate it. I can quickly focus it. So even that means samadhi is not present, you are not shaken. Similarly, even you don't have penetrative kind of wisdom. So you know now what is the kind of penetrative wisdom. I can quickly understand something. I quickly get the solution. I can see things very clearly. So this is the availability of the wisdom. But sometimes mind is not so. Mind is very much like blunt. Even that time you are not shaken, you are not worried. You know, I can handle it. I can quickly come back. I can recover quickly. So that sort of a situation is there. So we are going through these different phases of the practice. Don't know, am I answer your question, Jennifer?
Yes, Bhante. And I guess a follow-up is sometimes I feel like, you know, let's say, you know, I know right now that the mind is scattered. Is the right thing always to concentrate the mind and get rid of the scatteredness, or should I just go back to mindfulness and just watch the scattering mind?
Yeah,
how it operates.
Exactly. I think the second approach is much better because this scattering is another reality what we are going through. So vikittan chittang vikittan chittanti pajanati. So Buddha mentioned in the Chittanupassana level. So I mean this observation is different from the scatteredness. Scattering is a kind of a situation happening, a scenario happening time to time, but you are confidently watching it. It is not you. You are not identifying with it. You are not worried about it. But scattering is scattering. Scatteredness is scatteredness, but you can objectively look at it. You are not promoting it. You are not bewildered by that. But you can observe it after taking a step back. Then slowly you are not promoting scatteredness. Instead it will disappear. Again, you may return back to the typical clarity of the mind. Again, you may sort of establish in mindfulness, no scatteredness. Again, the peacefulness is available. Now, basically, So what is available in the mind is this peacefulness, kind of the stillness. But time to time it may go through scatteredness, little triggering, little ups and downs. But without worrying, we can simply observe it objectively. Then it may come back to the middle again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so if sometimes the mindfulness is not strong enough and the mind is actually going along, let's say, with the scattered mind, and promoting it, then that's when we have to use more of the forceful method of, let's say, increasing our concentration.
Because if things are not working in the typical practice, probably then again we can establish mindfulness using something physical, maybe left, right, or you can simply put your attention back to the rising and falling, or breath, couple of breaths, again re-establishing mindfulness.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Sohani for the next question.
Avsarai Bhatte, thank you, Jennifer. My question is, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My question is, when I am in doing Anapanasati, I hear outside sounds, for example, particularly when there are birds early morning. And since my interest is also, I think, on wildlife and birds and whatever, I have a tendency to observe that very clearly, and my mind goes there. I try to figure out what kind of a bird it is and so on and so forth. But I am aware of all of this as well. My question is, how do I stop this strong habit of mine? I hope you can help me, Bhante.
Mm-hmm. So, is it that you are enjoying these external sounds? Or are they simply happening and you are simply aware of them?
Well, the first one.
Yeah.
I am curious about the birds. I want to take photographs.
I see.
I want to, you know, that interest is there. It's stronger.
Right. So, I think then better, completely give it up and bring your attention back to something physical available within yourself. Say, for example, while these things are going on, still breathing happens, still rising and falling happens, and if you are walking, the walking happens. So rather than entertaining these external sounds, now you need to sort of order the mind to come and be with your experience, physical experience. Say, assume that you are walking. So time to time, your foot is touching the ground. So we are, rather than being in that delightful thought about the sound, bring your attention to this sensation when your foot is touching. So it's very much like you are purposely disturbing that delight that the mind is going through. Mind is very much like obsessed with what is being heard, but you are again and again disturbing it, again and again cutting that trend and bringing your attention back to your very here now and to yourself. And that if you are promoting that more and more, then with time, more time, the mind will be with you. Say, more steps you can observe. Now mind is not that engaged with the external sounds and not that fantasizing about the external sounds. Rather, it may be with you for some time, more time. And later, it will be fairly established within yourself, and those obsessive thinking fairly disappeared. It's a kind of a gradual process. So actually, you need to purposely cut or purposely disturb that trend available within you now.
Okay, Bhante. By giving a command.
Exactly,
like,
exactly.
Come back to my breath.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Sweeney for the next question.
Uh, Tirunasana Vante.
Yep.
Last time I think somebody asked this question of the difference between Chetana and Mano Sanchetana. And I was wondering whether it could this be the difference where it says in the Patita Samuppadam Skandhe, Vijnana Pajya Nama Rupa. Therefore, here the Chetana in name and form, it comes from the mind, isn't it? So therefore it could be Mano Sanchetana. And then in the Patita, it reverses na, Nama Rupa Pajya Vijnana. So here, then, the Chetana in name and form is associated with the form only. Therefore, it is Chetana. Can one take it like that, Pante?
The first one may be a little true, because we are, say, Vijnana Paccha Nama Rupa, and we are it is being conditioned by the Vijnana, so it could be considered as Sanchetana. But the other one, I mean, very difficult to answer, give a kind of a black and white answer here. Maybe the Sanchetana probably have the connotation that it is developed within. It is happen internally. And on the other hand, there are certain other types of Chetana which is happening because of someone else's persuasion. Say, Sankhara are capable of happening either within yourself, and it is purposeful, it is volitional. And sometimes it is happening because of someone else's persuasion. So likewise, different varieties are there. So probably the Sanchetana probably indicate that something happening internal within your own type of initiation. So that may be the one indicating. Actually, I couldn't particularly verify why this particular prefix has added to Chetana, for what purpose. I mean, I need to look into it a little carefully, just to give a clear cut answer.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jennifer. Am I unmuted? Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. Bhante, my question is similar to what Jennifer asked, but what is happening to me is this is not during meditation, because my mindfulness is strong. When I have thoughts, sometimes I don't like what I'm thinking and I get upset with myself.
Mm.
You know, because I'm mindful.
Yeah.
Therefore, little thoughts that come into my head, and I'm really upset with myself.
Mm-hmm.
How do I do it?
No, actually, now interesting thing is this. So these are, passing by thoughts. So
yes.
Why are we taking that so personally? I mean, it is true that, we have some relationship with. So why still my mind is thinking about lustful thoughts? Why still my mind is thinking about some jealous thoughts? Why still my mind is continuing with doubts? So likewise, I can have kind of a negative remark about what the mind is thinking. It is also have kind of an indication, because I like to have a fairly purified mind which is not thinking something unwholesome. Probably it may be thinking what is wholesome. So that is the attitude we have. But the interesting thing is, either it may be wholesome, either it may be unwholesome, they are merely thoughts. So Buddha's path is not here trying to think the best wholesome thoughts. And it is not thinking either the completely unwholesome bad thoughts. So all these two extremes are impermanent. So where we are resting is therefore in the middle, very much like the stillness of the mind. So these wholesome thoughts and unwholesome thoughts are very much like the two ripples. But
I see.
So when you are calming down, when you are calming down, what you experience is very much the balanced, the baseline, the middle, the kind of evenness of the mind is there. It's kind of tranquilized, kind of calmed down.
It's not happening during sitting meditation practice.
Yeah, yeah.
When I'm daily life.
Yes, yes. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it should be the way, because in the sitting meditation, you are fairly prepared. And so therefore thoughts are afraid of you. but during the other times you are little somewhat relaxed and somewhat lapse in the the ardentness. So as a result of that, mind is these different thoughts finding a excuse, finding a way to intrude. So the thoughts are happening. But interesting thing is, you are still noticing that. You still have noticed that, okay, thoughts are still happening. Not particularly in the sitting, but during the other occasions, okay, thoughts are happening. So you probably can see, because, these thoughts may have kind of a trigger coming through the karma server, something related to the sound, sight, smell, taste, etc. Or something related to the reputation, the maybe wealth, designation, etc., etc., and maybe related to the bhava. Okay, I want to have this thing, I want to have that thing, I want to become someone, I want to promote, so etc., etc. So the bhava related ones. Other thing is kind of promoting myself as a person, as an individual. So that is the avijja. So these are the, in a way, certain thoughts. So the thoughts are, in a way, the messengers issued by those three types of fetters: kamasava, bhavasava, avijjasava. So in that sense, we can understand, okay, still the fetters are available. Still internally some sedimented defilements are available. I need to work them out. So actually the noticing these thoughts are, in a way, good, because I can properly understand the situation. And again, I am, even during the daily activities, I can maintain some amount of mindfulness and not getting deluded by them. Because...
Bhante,
yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I was also wanting to tell you, sometimes these thoughts are memories.
Mm. Sure, sure. Very good. I mean, that is the thing. Either it may be certain fabrications, or maybe memories, or own mind creations. So many, many things are there. So all these are, little disturbance to the mind, and we simply notice them and simply allow them to pass away. Don't take them so seriously. They may have a little relationship with the availability of certain taints, asavas, but the way to eradicate them, or way to extinct them, is to know, notice, and then allow them to pass away. Janato bhikkhave passato asavanam kayam vadami. So you need to notice them. You need to know them. And when you know, notice them, slowly allow them to pass away without getting driven by them, without getting deluded by them. Yeah.
But the one of the things that I wanted to ask you was, one time previously in another sutta, I asked you a question about, Ajahn Brahm saying that samadhi is necessary and we don't go through that method, and you said you would do some in the future sutta that will explain this.
What is the statement?
One time in the past when you were doing some other sutra, maybe this part that we are doing is like more vipassana, straight vipassana, not going through jhana first, right?
Yes, yes.
So Ajahn Brahm says in the Eightfold Path, you have to have samadhi before prajna. So, most of the monks,
tell that, yes, yes.
In this part of the world, they propose that.
Mm-hmm.
So you said one time that you would undertake to explain a sutra that explains how the one we are studying is viable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Here say you cannot do it the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I wanted. to know whether you could explain
that. Okay, I'll find out the sutta, because the explanation of Samma Samadhi. Now, in certain suttas, Samma Samadhi is mentioned particularly as the eighth jhana. Mm-hmm. But certain other suttas, Samma Samadhi is defined differently. So that is where we need to be careful. So you know that there are different approaches are available. But the different approaches in the sense, Samatha Pubbangama Vipassana, where you develop a fair amount of concentration and then you turn to Vipassana. So that is one method. Another method is Vipassana Pubbangama Samatha, where you start with Vipassana and if necessary, you can develop Samatha concentration practices as well. That is another approach. And then the third approach is available, what you call as a Yuganadha, where you are taking both in parallel. So one day, in the morning you practice Samatha, in the evening you practice Vipassana. So likewise, you take both parallelly. So that is also available. And there's another one, what you call Dhamma Uddaccha Vigrahita Manasa, where as you are continuing with practice, so this is kind of a common thing, the mind get scattered, distracted because of the Dhamma itself. So at that time you need to even let go of Dhamma, keep the mind fairly quiet, allowing the mind to settle, calm down, even not getting scattered because of the mind, because of the Dhamma. So that type of approach is also there. So let me come up with the Samadhi related sutta, where Buddha explained different types of Samadhi, and that may be interesting for us to investigate. I'll put it. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Probably Jennifer can send me an email so that we have some evidence, so that I also get kind of a reminder.
Sure, Bante.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Bante.
Yeah.
Many blessings to you. Thank you, Jennifer.
You're welcome. For the next question, it's a written question, Bente, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I've also sent the question to you via chat.
Yeah.
So the question says, Swamin Wahansa, kindly explain difference between Manayatanaya and Dhammayatanaya.
Manayatanaya and Dhammayatanaya, yeah. So as we discussed last time, when we consider Ayatana, so Ayatana has many tasks. I mean, seeing, say for example, Chakkayatana, so it is seeing, and based on seeing, there are many other continuous, consecutive tasks attached with. And you are investigating what you see, what you are thinking about what you see, you are recognizing what you see, you are feeling what you see, even proliferating based on what you have seen. So this is the fairly the action of the Ayatana. But on the other hand, if you merely see, just see, then what we can say is you are merely seeing, you are not getting to the level of Ayatana. So Chakkuncha Nirujjati Rupa Sanyacha Virajjati. So the Chakku, this Ayatana part is fairly stopped, fairly faded away, and whatever the signs, marks that you have taken through that Ayatana also has faded away, also has disappeared. Similarly, if you consider Manayatana, so the activity of the Manayatana is thinking, again and again thinking, obsessive thinking, too much thinking. And there may be a thought appear, there may be a sign appear, there may be a mental image appear. So based on that, it start thinking, start ruminating, fantasizing, daydreaming, many things are there. So this is the function of the Manayatana. So the food for Manayatana is the Dhammayatana, the different mental objects. Now, when a mental object comes to the mind, if we simply recognize it and let it go, then the function of the Manayatana is fairly restricted, fairly calmed down. Awareness is there, but not to the level of fully functional level of the Manayatana. So this is how we need to know the different levels of Ayatana. And more we know different kinds of defilements appearing Based on these ayatana, then slowly those defilements may reduce, fabrications may reduce, and ultimately we can minimize it to merely seeing, to merely hearing, to merely sensing, to merely cognition. That's it. Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Sante. There's a written question that I think was in response to your last, or your answer to Ms. Kumudini. And the question says, isn't at least the first jhana necessary to see dukkha?
Mm.
Therefore, isn't sartha necessary to develop this prana?
Yeah, actually, certainly, saddha is necessary, concentration is necessary. So, different. I mean, all these faculties are necessary. I mean, so those are the, in a way, we can call it them as kind of a controversial points. So some teachers argue, okay, it is a must to have at least first jhana, must to have at least second jhana. So likewise, certain arguments are there. Certain other teachers argue, okay, you need to have some amount of concentration, true. But it is not a must to have it up to the level of jhana. And again, say, definitions of jhana also are different. Now, certain arguments are still there. Now, what is available today as jhana? Is it the same jhana Buddha explained? Or are these jhana later evolved, taken some evidence, taken some traditions from the Hinduism? So that is another complication. So therefore, this jhana, it is difficult to exactly say, okay, Is this exactly same jhana Buddha explained as the samatha jhana? And on the other hand, certain teachers explain, okay, while developing vipassana, you still have jhana. Now, if you refer in this life, in this very life, the book In This Very Life by Sayado Upandita, it's a very popular book, and there he mentioned all four jhana with respect to vipassana. So when you are again and again reflecting, when you are again and again contemplating a particular object, so all jhana factors are available. Vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekaggata. So those are available. And probably you can define it as the first jhana. So nobody has refuted it. So therefore, we don't need to worry thinking that I definitely have to go to absorption, then only it is possible to do vipassana. That is one approach. But there are other methods available. Say you develop certain amount of concentration, true. You can maintain your attention for a long time with a particular selected object. That is good. When it is there, then you continue this investigation. The investigation itself is now promoting the concentration. It's a kind of a parallel activity going on. It is not that you stop investigation for the sake of developing very high concentration. Rather, once you develop some amount of concentration or enough concentration, you start investigation. And this very investigation helps to develop bojjhanga, and ultimately you are coming to the samadhi based on investigation. So that is what happened in the bojjhanga level. In the bojjhanga level, the samadhi talk there is not something absorption. Rather, the bojjhanga level samadhi is something based on the investigation. Again and again, you see the reality of different phenomena. And in order to see that, you are maintaining enough collectedness of the mind. It is not the absorption, but rather the collectedness. Again and again, your mind is fairly focused, without getting distracted for a considerable period of time, so that you can continue the investigation successfully. So therefore, we need to look at them as a collective situation, as a collaboration of all these items, faculties, and then I think we can get a proper picture, rather than taking one item and arguing, okay, you need to have this item at this level. So it's very difficult. I mean, it's a kind of a collaborative effect, collective action going on during the investigation. And even today, when we were discussing, say, the Sona Sutta, so Buddha's emphasis is to have this evenness of the balance, evenness of the faculties. The evenness has to be there. The balance has to be there. So the concentration has to be balanced with effort. Wisdom has to be balanced with faith. Or everything has to be monitored with sati, mindfulness. Then you may come to the proper balance. Then the proper observation may continue. Okay, we can continue.
That was Sweeney's question, and I see you have your hand raised again. Did Bhante address your question?
Yeah, I'd like to ask a further question relating to this. Because when I sort of say that you need sattva before you can develop prajna, because if Buddha hadn't found this Dhamma, I wouldn't understand this. I wouldn't have discovered this myself. So I felt that sattva was very necessary to get to prajna.
Mm.
And I'm referring to not so much the samatha jhana, but the investigative jhana. When Buddha sort of spoke about jhana or whatever, it was just the bhavanizing. He didn't say samatha, vipassana. He didn't differentiate, but he just said bhavana. And therefore, I thought this is actually a 24-hour thing. Like the first jhana could be a 24-hour thing, like if we realize, you know, through our own investigations, to see within ourselves the dukkha, like all the experiences that one could go through. You see your own dukkha, and then you see the anicca side of the sankhara, and you know, all that develops. So therefore, the sardha for Buddha grows and grows and grows because I have seen it within myself that what Buddha said was true. It is actually happening in front of me. My 24, not when I close my eyes and relax and bhavana, but in my 24-hour life, my practical life, when things are happening, you see it and immediately goes to Buddha's teachings. Isn't this what he said? So when the prajna grows, I think, because of the sattva. So for a normal, like an ordinary person like me, I think the sattva is the dominating thing, and it balances, then the prajna comes, and then with sati, it balances the whole thing. Am I wrong?
Yeah, actually the same thing I also have mentioned. So at the beginning we have faith. It is not yet the experiential type of thing is available, because therefore still what we have is kind of a trust on the Buddha, kind of a love towards the Buddha, respect towards the Buddha. With that we start the practice. But later with the practice we start to really experience what we have mentioned. What is available in the Dhamma is now become fairly internalized, practical, available to us. Through my own practice now I can know, I am confident that what Buddha has mentioned is true. So that is why I mentioned through Dhamma now we start seeing the Buddha. Now that type of saddha is unwavering. It is not a blind saddha. Now it is a kind of factual saddha. It is a now an experiential wisdom based saddha. So that is, therefore the saddha is evolving. Even though we start with some superficial type of saddha, it is growing to the level, it becomes a more factual, more confident, experience-based, wisdom-based type of saddha.
Yes, thank you very much, Sadhana.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Chitta Devi for the next question.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. I just have two queries. Bhante, the first one is Kumudini was talking about these thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And now I manage these thoughts, like if something comes from the past, like, you know, somebody has done something which was not very pleasant, I just stop it there and say, well, you know, that is the past and there's nothing we can do about it. So I stop it then and there and I move on. Now, is that a good way of approaching it?
Yes, definitely.
It's not suppressing,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Sometimes I even go a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of analyze it a little bit more because,
yeah,
in a like a vipassana thing, and I let it go because if there's nothing we can do, what is the means of there's no sense in thinking about it, but it just comes up.
Correct.
But there I prevent the proliferation.
Exactly.
At that level.
Exactly. Yeah, correct. That should be
that is a good way, right?
Yes. So as much as possible, it is necessary that we understand it. Okay, this is maybe related to something, but later we understand the repercussions. No point of continuing this sort of thinking. It's a burden.
Yeah.
It's a burden to the mind. It's a friction to the mind.
Yes.
Let me simply let it
Absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing also about the samatha and vipassana, all that sort of thing. Now we are obviously training to do it in the vipassana way, but sometimes when we are using the breath, now I mean not the abdomen so much, and we are using the breath and we are just watching this breath coming in and touching the nostril and going back, it becomes finer and finer for me. I don't know. I mean, please explain if it's not right. It becomes like a samatha sometimes, Pante, because we are watching this with a lot of intensity, and then it's very fine. And sometimes while I'm doing vipassana and I have gone through this, you know, watching the impermanence and all that, but I'm watching this breath so finely that I see all these beautiful colors and all that sort of thing, which is not in the vipassana as far as I understand.
Yes.
So can you just sort of switch on and off like that, or is that just not correct?
No, actually you can switch. Yeah, I mean, we may be going through this.
It happens. Yes, it happens. I'm not that I'm wanting to switch or anything.
Yes, yes. So these are the different stages that we are going through. Say at the beginning, we can't say that immediately we are practicing vipassana. Rather, we are trying to establish mindfulness. So, and when the mindfulness is established, as you mentioned, some blissful experiences are going on, and still we can't say we are doing vipassana. So this may be related to the samatha. But later, rather than being deluded by them, or rather than being attached to these experiences, now we are trying to look at them objectively. Okay, this is another type of feeling. This is another type of, perception. So likewise, now we are looking at them objectively. So that turns the mind to vipassana. So looking at things as they truly are.
Yes, Bhante, I watch the beautiful colors and I say, my gosh, now I'm telling myself, they arise and pass away and then another color is coming and so then again I go back to vipassana and this is all impermanent.
Exactly.
It's arising and passing away, and this is also due to this cause. Because then I tell myself, when if I get up now, all this will go.
Correct.
So that is also okay, no Bhante?
True, and you can see for yourself how when conditions are available, how when conditions are available they are arising, and when those conditions are not available they simply fade away. So they are completely dependent.
Yes,
completely dependent.
Exactly, because when I get up, I mean it's all over.
Yes.
Finish.
Yes. Yes.
It's like a movie.
Yeah. So when we have that attitude, then we are not, worried when they are not available even. And we are not targeting them. We don't consider they are the the end of the practice. So they are the objective of the practice. Rather, having this understanding, having this proper understanding, how things are really happening, what is this really going on, how they are interrelated, how dependent they are. So this is the kind of a proper attitude what we are developing. So that is where fairly in line with Buddha's insights. Vipassana means insights, and they are the ones actually maturing us, and ultimately even releasing us.
I mean, when I first started, I used to hope that I used to really get these nice experiences, but now it's totally different. You know, I just sit and I just accept what comes and what goes, and I have no expectations whatsoever. But as a result of that, I find my whole body is very, very relaxed and very, it's a different experience.
Correct. I mean, we all go through these different phases. I mean, no point of telling, assume a beginner when he is simply trying to catch up the thing. He is simply trying to establish mindfulness. And he simply, first day, he experienced kind of a blissful experience. So, I mean, no point of telling him to give it up. Because he need to have some experience. He need to go through it. He need to taste it.
Yes.
He need to taste it. And once he tasted it for some time, he himself may understand, okay, this is also coming and going. Now I don't have that kind of a remarkable experience when this is happening, even though I had very remarkable, wonderful experience 1 year ago, 6 months ago, when I first experienced this, but it has become a normal, familiar, ordinary thing right now. So now he is more matured.
Yes, Mahante. That is the idea of doing the bhavana.
Exactly.
I mean, we are not going to move forward, and then we are just wasting our time. No?
Yeah.
Okay, Bhante.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Radhika for the next question.
Thank you, Bhante. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
My question is on my meditation, and I'm doing the Iriyakatha, a lot of walking meditation, and Bhante asked me to increase, so I have increased not just the popular walking, but other things too, and it's going reasonably well. I am, my mindfulness has increased, not just only in the walking meditation, but if I'm just walking, what I mean is if I go for a walk or if I have to walk to the grocery store close by, I'm still automatically becoming more mindful of the feelings of the foot, even though I'm not doing walking meditation. Now my question is, do I have to now start increasing my sitting meditation? Because to be able to do all that, I increase the time on my what they call Iriyapata Bhavana or Iriyapata Pava. Now sometimes I'm in my daily life, I am noticing the thoughts. I'm pretty equanimous whether the thought is good or bad. I realize this is just thoughts. And somebody told me that I should be doing 1 hour of sitting too. And I wasn't doing 1 hour of sitting. I was sometimes doing 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And then I get a lot of sensations, and I just watch them arise and pass away. And then, you know, I feel like, okay, this is enough, and I just give it up. Like, I just feel like it's the meditation is over. So I never kind of said, okay, I have to do 1 hour, I have to do 1 hour. Should I be going back to 1 hour, 1 hour, like that?
No, it depends. Actually, if you feel that the session is over and the certain signs happen indicating that the session is over, better get up and have a relaxed walk and still continuing your practice. I mean, it is not that you finish the meditation. You have finished the sitting, but now assume that you are going to the walking, and you establish mindfulness, and again you start observing various phenomena. Now you are continuing the meditation. So, I mean, sometimes people have the wrong attitude that meditation has to be sitting. So sitting is just a 1/4 of it. I mean, we are maintaining, as you mentioned, that we are maintaining four types of postures. So each and every posture we can make use of to develop the mind. So developing the mind, developing the spiritual qualities, we can call as the meditation. It is not just sitting. How many hours we sit does not really indicate how well that we have done that, how well our mind has developed. Yeah.
It's like this one thing. Now, if I get up in the night, I sometimes observe the sensations.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I am observing the breath because the breath is noticeable. But then I do the 1 hour and then I'm kind of tired. That's why I sit.
Mm.
I'm not telling exactly 1 hour, but I'm saying about an hour. Mm-hmm. And then I walk down. So then when I'm seated down, I just observe whatever I feel in the body.
Hmm.
And sometimes it's the sensations, sometimes it's the breath, and then I will just observe the breath. And I might move back again to the sensations because the sensations are strong.
Mm-hmm.
So are you telling me that when I feel like that is finished, I should go back to walking again?
Yeah, I mean, if you feel that you can continue your practice, you can go for the walk, no problem.
Sometimes what I do because of my circumstances, I have been getting up very early to have the privacy to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
So I do from 4 to 5 walking, and then I do my sitting sometimes from 5 to 5:30, and sometimes till about 6 when the house is busy, I again walk.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I feel like sleepy at the end of the sitting meditate, and
correct.
I think, oh, I'll take a small nap.
Mm-hmm. Fine, it would be fine. Because it would be fine because, you know, the practice has to be, you know, kind of refreshing, not over, not tiring yourself.
Right.
Rather developing some refreshness within, into the
right.
mind, into the mind. So therefore, no harm.
So
yeah.
If I just let myself do what the body says, right?
Yeah, very much like, yes.
Okay, so because
yeah.
in all together, there is at least 1 hour plus half an hour, and then there is natural walking, and then there is swimming, because even that is a movement.
Mm-hmm.
I do that 3 times a week too.
Yeah, yeah, fine.
It should be okay.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you. It looks like Kumudini, you may have another question.
Sorry, it's more like a comment, but you have the time, Bhante?
Yeah, you can spend 2 minutes.
Okay, well, what I wanted to, you know, clarify in my question is, I wanted to, first of all, I would like to read those sutras for myself, Bhante.
Yes.
Because I want to have an understanding, because when I talk with people, they some Sri Lankan, some people say, oh, don't go into jhana. You get to liking it, then you won't be able to proceed. Then there are other people who say yudanas are necessary. Even the Satipatthana Sutta says priti, sukha, all that things arise. So it is the first jhana.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm terribly confused. The people, the monks here, like they say that the jhana is an absolute must, and we are going another way. So I just want to sort of read up the sutras and have a clear understanding for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I know you explained it pretty much, you know, but I want to sort of read it up for myself. So
correct.
It is, you know, so I can sort of speak and
yeah.
understand it more clearly.
Sure. That's why, I mean, we'll take a particular sutta which give us a more proper sort of perspective about these things. And I'll indicate the names of the suttas so you yourself can verify them. No problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So I think we have spent more than 1.5 hours today. We discussed this particular sutta, and then we had a very wonderful discussion. And with that, we were able to accumulate some merits. So we share these merits with all the celestial beings, with all the past devil relatives, and with whoever in need of merits. Let's wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha cha bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasattha cha bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanang. Akasattha cha bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadhu sadhu sadhu.